Hi, my name is Nuri Halprin. I'm a developer, and today I'm going to talk to you about concurrency. What is concurrency about? Well, you know that computer? You have one, your cell phone is a computer. All of this hardware is actually highly concurrent. We're used to, as developers, to write our program top to bottom and think, oh, it's going to execute this instruction, and so forth. That's not actually true. On the motherboard, there are things called interrupts, and the hardware just works. There's a clock ticking, and things happen all over the board, all over the place, in parallel, concurrently. So the operating system may give us a semblance that things are just happening linearly, but they are not. Even if you understand that under the hood things happen concurrently, in your programming language, as long as you don't have multiple threads, you might be okay. You might actually be executing in serial. But more often than not, on a web server, when you have shared memory among classes, in other desktop applications that launch multiple threads, you are going to experience concurrency. Somebody clicked a mouse, you're going to get a mouse clicked event. Somebody did something with a piece of memory that you were trying to read, trouble can come. Let's talk about this kind of trouble. Imagine you have central memory, and it has a number. The variable x has a value of 3. Now, imagine there are two threads, meaning they're running the same program, so it's the same algorithm for both. Two threads want to do something with x. Let's say your program says, take x and increment it by 1. Okay, so I have two separate threads. This guy, what does he do? Well, he copies the value of x over, so now he has 3. And this guy essentially does the same, 3. And then add 1 to it, so 3 plus 1, oh, that's 4. 3 plus 1, oh, that's 4. And at the end of that, let's put the value back in x so that it's in memory. And this guy says, okay, it's 4 now. Okay, it's 4 now. That's wrong. What should have happened is if these two did this in parallel, this number should have been 5, right? 3 plus 1 here and plus 1 here. Universally, we know it should have been 5. But what really happened is that they stepped over each other's toes and got us the wrong answer, which is 4. Wrong answer. So what can we do about this? In basketball, one thing you could do is have zone defense. So how about central memory starts with a number, just like before, x equals 3 to start with. And this guy comes in and says, hey, I want the number. And this guy comes at the same time too. Central memory will issue a lock, a global lock, which is kind of like a zone defense. When this guy comes in, if nobody already is in the zone, it's going to say, yeah, sure, have the number. Copy 3 over. You're good. This guy comes in. It's going to be locked out. The value here will not be available to it to look at or modify until this guy finishes its operation. So this guy will work and add 1 to it equals 4, and then it will return the number in and say, okay, now you are 4. At which point, this lock can be released, and the next one coming in is going to say, okay, give me the number. Now it's 4, okay, he copies 4 over, adds 1 to it, equals 5, writes it back, and once there are no interested parties, this shield can go down. The next party in is going to raise the shields up and prevent anybody else from doing something at the same time. So first of all, let's ask ourselves, did it give us the right results? Yeah, it did. Two people incremented by 1, and the value got incremented to 5 eventually, right? That was the second one. It wrote a 5 in. We got the right result. But at what cost? Well, at the cost of, while one of these guys is busy, no other process, no other thread can come in and do anything. So this is where we talk about contention. If you have high contention, many interested parties at the same time, this global lock is kind of limiting. It's very heavy-handed, and it will slow things down. So the reason we want concurrency is because we want things to move in parallel and to be able to operate rather quickly. We increase our bandwidth, increase the amount of things that can be done at the same time. Well, here we're preventing that. We're saying only one thing can happen to this piece of memory at any given time, which gives us a right result, but a little heavy-handed. How about we do something a little different? How about we say, well, look, if we have multiple processes, multiple threads, and all they want to do is look at the number, let them. That's kind of easy, right? If this thread commits to and this, they're all just saying, hey, I want to know what the value is, but I'm not going to modify it. I just want to say, hey, what's this guy's ID number? Or what's this guy's name? Then, you know, we can just give it to them. They're not going to change it. So who cares how many of them there are? They're just going to copy that value for read-only use. That's okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, hey, as long as the thread says I'm interested in reading it only, I'm just going to keep a little side tally saying, okay, he wants to know what it is, and he wants to know, and he wants to know. He just wants to read it. It's fine. Now, if anybody comes in and says, ooh, I need to change it, then we change our tactics. Then we say, whoa, 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 you want to write it? We're going to have to see, okay, there are three people who are still looking at it. You can't change it while they're looking at it. I'll get to that in a second. You can't change it while they're still looking at it. So each one of those, once they're done looking, they better come back and say, I'm done looking, I'm done looking, I'm done looking. Once everybody is done looking, a write lock, full shields on, can be applied. Now, anybody else who wants to read or write is going to be blocked out. This guy is going to be favored. Do the operation, take 5, add 1 to it, equals 6, write back to it, shields down. So this mechanism is an evolution of the full lock, right? It gives us better concurrency in the face of read contention, right? If there are many, many readers and not a lot of writers, this can be much faster because I don't need to go into any special shields on in order to just supply the read value. But when I go and I have a writer or multiple writers, I go back to the full on lock and it's slowed down. But if there's not a lot of write contention, that could still be pretty fast. Now, I said that we need to keep a tally here on the read of who's reading. Why is that? Well, if we're just looking at the number 5, the number 5 isn't how things are stored inside the computer. In fact, the number 5 is likely an integer, say a 4-byte value. Or maybe it's an 8-byte value. Or maybe it's a full-on class that has a bunch of arrays and things and other subclasses attached to it and I don't know what. So this memory structure I'm protecting is not necessarily one atomic piece that I can just copy in one fell swoop within the hardware. Because of that, I don't want anybody to be writing while I'm reading. Because if I'm copying part of the number out in part in order to give it to the reader, and somebody comes in here and starts modifying here this part and this part, then I'm going to have the state of memory here corrupted. I can't protect it atomically. So at any given point, I want to maintain coherency or maintain uncorrupt memory. And therefore, I'm taking a lock and ensuring that multi-byte reads can happen, and they're safe from writing by any other thread at the same time. So this is a lock, and this guy had to keep track of who's reading, who's writing, and so forth. And even with read-write locks, we have this maybe sluggishness of raising the shield and preventing others from accessing it concurrently. How about a different way? We'll still take central memory. We'll have a variable x. We'll give it a number, 7. Why not? And then, when an interested thread comes in and says, hey, I want to do something with it, when we're giving the thread the value, what we're going to do is we're going to give him the value, and we're also going to assign a little password, if you will, a little concurrency token. It could be a number, it could be a string, it could be a GUID, I don't really care what it is. It could be, if this is a class that contains multiple values, some kind of version of the class. But we're going to give it a value. Let's say A. Now, another thread might come in and also just read it. If they read it at the same time, they're both going to have the number, what it is, and the version A. At some point later, if any process wants to write back, what they'll do is they'll compare the value that they got, the password, to the current existing password. If it's the same, they know that nobody changed it. But once this value gets changed, so let's say this guy says, hey, I want it to be 8. It knew it brings it back in, and now we change this to be B. Now this guy says, you know what? I feel like scribbling on the value of X2. It comes in and says, my password is A. Uh-oh, new password is B. Sorry, rejected. So by using a concurrency token like that, we shift the onus of whether an update is safe or not to the other threads, and we protect memory by saying that we got to play by the rules. You got to compare the password to the current existing password. And this is A and B. It doesn't have to be incrementing. It doesn't have to be a string. It could be a number. It can even be a random number. The point is that by storing another little bit of information, we are enabling multiple and a huge multitude of other interested parties to just read the value as it is, and we resolve the concurrency issue at the write time. So rather than protecting it from the get-go with a lock, we defer this resolution to later on and only in case of writes. So this means that when we have a lot of writer contention, there is a chance that a process may come in and say, oh, this changed already, right? He wrote 8, he updated it to 8, and it's version B. I can't trust whatever I had before because there's a new password, which means somebody changed it. I need to read again and reapply my operation. So it has a cost to it, but the nice thing here is that we don't need full reader-writer lock. Many people can concurrently just copy over the data, and the resolution of this gets deferred. So when you have low write contention, then the chances of this password changing is kind of low. When you have high write contention, maybe full locking would be a little better for you. So that's a concurrency token method of protecting the memory. So the last thing I'm going to maybe talk about is, how about we just don't worry about it? Don't worry about it. You just told me I have to worry about it. Well, kind of, yeah, maybe. But how about we do something where we're not applying any lock whatsoever? What we're going to do is we're going to have the notion of the variable of x backed by some point where it has the current value. And whenever any party wants to take that 7, add 1 to it, and write it back, they don't write on the old value. They just append it later on and say it's now 8. And another one will come and it says, oh, it's now 9. Right? I'm not going to prevent anyone from writing or asking or challenging with a version number or are you going to read or write or anything. All I'm going to do is, hey, you want to modify the value of x, just tack it to the end of the list. There's a side effect to that. It's pretty obvious. If I came and asked what the value of x, the system could ask me at what point in time. So we could have a song and dance that says, look, whenever somebody comes and tries to read that value, what they're going to do is read the last available value. Simple rule, right? And what we're going to do is essentially ignore the previous values and over time just recycle them or remove them. So the value of x is going to be a moving target. At any point in time, I'm not going to have the value of x, period. I'm going to have values of x. And when I'm going to take the value out, I'm going to try to take the last one known. And when I'm going to modify, I'm just going to add it to the end of the list. So that works kind of interestingly. It doesn't require the full lock approach of before, but it introduces some issues. For instance, several threads might try to read the value of x. One of them came right before this was written, so he sees an 8. And the other one, within a picosecond later, sees a 9. These two have different versions of it. And the question is, does it matter? So for some calculations and things, that exact value is extremely important. And for some other classes of problems, now having the exact value, like how many people visited the site? Do I care if I show the user an 8 or a 9 when it's, 1,209,000,000 or 1,208,000,000? Doesn't matter that much. But, transfer money from Bob to Sally or from Sally to Bob, well, yeah, it matters to them a lot, so we need the full locking. So this algorithm can be implemented with less locking and ceremony, but does bring up issues when you need absolute coherency among all readers. One more idea before we conclude. What we had before is that central memory, right, the motherboard, the operating system, protected this memory with some mechanisms on the operating system side. And the interested threads were really kind of taking care of the mutation itself. Well, another idea, and it doesn't necessarily work on all levels, is what if instead of having this issue where I have a 3 here and he copies a 4 and a 4 and now it's 5 and now it's wrong, instead of having these guys increment the number, what if these guys said, hey, whatever you had there, please add a 1 to it. And this guy said, hey, whatever you have there, please add a 1 to it. If we manage to delegate that concurrency into the central processor, we wouldn't have these separate things to coordinate. There's just one central memory, right? So it can be managing these operations internally in the same domain in here and not have it done outside. So the speed gain here is that now there isn't this shuttling time of data and putting shields up and down and all of that kind of stuff. This is all done here. Yeah, sure, there's complexity in here to build in, but this is really nice for concurrency. And in fact, this touches on concepts like CQRS, command query segregation principles. The idea there is that rather than have disconnected client or distant threads or processes try to figure out whether they have the right copy or everything, they send over mutation commands. That's the command part of things. And then the central processor responds with yes, it worked, or no, it didn't work, or just queues it up for later execution. At any given point, if somebody wanted to read, they don't read what they just wrote. They send a separate request saying, hey, what's the value of X? And central will return to them whatever the value of X is at that time. And we don't know if this is before or after this command. That's the segregation part of CQRS. The nice thing about this arrangement is it's extremely scalable. Basically, we're freeing these processes from being involved in the concurrency. They simply send messages saying, hey, I want something done. And then on a separate channel, they can say, hey, are you done yet? Or where are you? Or what's the value right now? But there isn't a busyness with central coordinating multiple remote processes. So because it processes everything internally, it can respond to many things concurrently and decide how fast to apply those commands, update by one or update by one if it's three or anything like that. So it lets you build really nice scalable systems without the need for this distributed locking that we talked about before. So that's it for concurrency. We talked about no locking at all and what's the dangers or what's the pros and cons of that. We talked about full locks. We talked about reader-writer locks. We talked about concurrency tokens. And we talked a little about CQRS. So those are just principles. Every programming language and every scalable database has their own mechanisms for dealing with concurrency. But hopefully this theory will kind of let you think about it in a more structured way and understand some of the pros and cons of each of these methods. Thank you very much.